Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and thank you for tuning into this episode of the Story Night podcast. If for some reason you are just finding this podcast for the first time, you have stumbled upon part two of a very intense two-part story. So you need to pause right here and go back an episode to listen to part one of Brittany's story. You might also want to stop and listen to episode one of this podcast so that you have some idea of what Story Night is, what our vision is, our purpose, and our history. Now, for those who have just recently listened to part one, we left you probably a little shell-shocked and maybe very emotional because we just went through countless traumas in just 18 years of your life. It in many ways, it doesn't seem real that so many horrific things could happen to one individual. And that is why I keep saying it is a miracle that you are here. And not just here, but healthy and thriving and doing well.
Right.
So we are going to pick up the story at the end of your high school. You've graduated. And I'm going to attempt to give the fastest recap of part one in case, you know, somebody's listening to this and it's been a long time since they've heard part one. You are somebody who had to grow up extremely early.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents divorced. You were constantly moving. For a while, you were raised by your grandmother, experienced a horrible grief with the death of your grandfather, was sexually abused as a 12-year-old, developed an eating disorder, had to basically be the adult to take care of your brother, and then ended up taking care of your father also,
mm-hmm.
got pregnant at 15, had an abortion, got into drugs, tried to commit suicide, fell into an extremely dangerous relationship with an older woman who tried to kill you.
Yeah.
And somehow, through all of that, you managed to get back to high school and graduate with honors.
Yeah.
If that's not a modern day miracle, I don't know what is. And there are more miracles coming in your story.
But when you recap the story like that, it's like, it sounds like a horror film. It's bizarre to hear it verbally portrayed that way. But yeah, that's exactly right.
And at this point where we left off, you felt like it was time for a fresh start.
Yes.
And for many people, that includes moving to a new place.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to pick up the story there. And I do want to give another trigger warning to those listening. We are going to cover more mature topics, some more heavy things. Because as much as I would love to say, and I know you would love to say, it's all like rainbows from this point forward, there's still a lot of trial to come. So where did you move? And we'll pick up the story there.
So after I turned 19, graduation commenced, kind of had the summer to reflect and figure out what I wanted to do, you know, actively engage in that fresh start that I felt like I needed so much. I picked up and I moved down to Tempe, Arizona, where my cousin was living at the time, going to ASU. The apartment that we lived in was in Mesa, but just on the edge of Tempe, right on very, very close to where the campus was. I went down there with no plan, no direction, just sort of figuring it out and literally starting fresh. Within probably a week of me being down there, I was like, okay, kind of have to get it together. I don't have any money to pay for anything. My cousin's in college. I can't expect her to take care of me. She was working at a place at the time that was a gentleman's club, and logically, quote unquote, seemed like a pretty shoe-in experience for me to just get some fast cash and start contributing to me living down there. It's not very difficult to get hired in places like that, so I started pretty much on the spot. It was a horrible experience from the start. The location where this particular gentleman's club was right in the middle of a couple different sports teams, NFL and NBA. So a lot of their frequent patrons were professional athletes and known for not providing the most respectful experiences to the employees that work there. So immediately found myself in a couple situations while working at this place that were compromising my morality again and also putting me into some physically dangerous situations while in the establishment. Not only did that happen, but I chuckle about this now, but it turns out I was a very, very terrible dancer. And probably because it went against all of the morals of my being and just didn't really feel like I fit in with that place. So that was a very short-lived experience, but not a great one. I was left with nothing again. And I say short experience, I lasted 2 weeks and I could no longer take that on top of just everything else. And with the free time that I had, again, kind of self-pity, not feeling like I had anything to provide to the world, I was just sitting here, freeloading in my cousin's apartment, and I got in a really dark place down there really fast within a month of being down there. I had access to alcohol, so I had started drinking very heavily again. I did not have access to any other drugs, which was a good thing for me at the time. However, an addict always finds a way to get their fix. And so I started drinking bottles of NyQuil to put myself to sleep because of where I was at mentally. And one of those nights, towards the end of my stay down there in Arizona, I got to such a low point again that I attempted to commit suicide for the second time. I had taken half of a bottle of ibuprofen and mixed it with a couple other over-the-counter medications, and then drank two full bottles of NyQuil. I didn't want to go on anymore. I was completely done with everything at that point, thinking that this was going to be the savior for me to get away, and immediately went right back into just horror within myself. Like, it was just all pessimistic all the time, and I felt like there was no escape. I went back to the hospital. My cousin's roommate came home and was able to get me to the emergency room where I got flushed. So, again, just saved for no reason because I did not feel like I deserved that. This was the second time that I had thought that I was going to just leave and not have to deal with the ramifications of these actions that I was portraying. And then also, like, putting people in a situation to have to pick up my pieces because I couldn't go through with it all the way, or it didn't work out the way that I had planned. That hurt me so bad. And I just outwardly want to verbally tell these people how sorry I am that I put them in that situation. But after getting out of the hospital and realizing this was not the fresh start that I was expecting it to be, I decided to come back home. And this was 30 days to the day of me being down there that all of this happened. My grandmother paid for me to get on a little puddle jumper back up here to Portland. That's when the next phase of my life started. I had a really good friend during high school. We re-engaged when I got back. And she just was kind of supporting me and helping me just kind of get back on my feet because I was living back at home, didn't have really any direction. I just was kind of alive when I didn't want to be. And so we were regulars at a hookah bar in Beaverton. And at the time, hookah bars were just extremely popular and on the rise. And we befriended a lot of the owners and patrons of various different hookah bars in the Portland, Beaverton area, metropolitan area. And I became really good friends with the owner of one of them. And he knew kind of the situation that I was in, and he offered me a job, which was a blessing at the time because I needed some type of an escape to get me just kind of out of this dark hole. That time of my life, I can say was probably one of the better times of my life. It was crazy for sure, but I was not experiencing the trauma or the drug addiction or anything like that. I had a very positive group of people surrounding me, and the owner of that establishment really got me through a tough place in my life. I got exposed to the culture, the Middle Eastern culture of the hookah bar scene, and the very interesting time compared to what I had been surrounded by previous years past, because I go from just down in the dumps and really not feeling like I belonged anywhere, and now I'm getting treated like a princess by this culture. And I was exposed to, fast cars and expensive dinners and just like the love that poured around me during this time in just a positive way. Like, just for me to have an experience in life up to this point that was something that was fulfilling me was so crucial to the next steps in my life. So I owe a lot of a turning point to that era of my life. I got to a certain point at around 20 years old where I was like, I'm ready to start being a big kid and get a big kid career and kind of like look for something that's more fulfilling. I had met a guy at the hookah bar, and him and I had become really good friends. And at the time, it really was just that. It was just really good friends. But sometimes friendly things lead to other things, and I ended up pregnant again at 20. And in the middle of the beginning of that pregnancy is when I started my career at Wells Fargo. So in that moment, the transition of that moment, like it was like all of these super great things. Like I was like, okay, I'm finally here. This is what I've been waiting for my whole life. Start my career at Wells Fargo. My pregnancy was absolutely terrible.
And now, as a quick reminder for anyone who heard part one, you had experienced all of this horrible pain through your cycles, and where you left us off, there was no diagnosis yet. And now, at this point, I believe you've figured out that you had endometriosis.
Yes, that is correct. There was a point in time right before I went down to Arizona, and I was just getting all of my physical checkups done, and they had done a scan for some reason because my blood pressure was really high and they couldn't really quite figure out, so they were doing a bunch of testing. And they look back on my charts and they're like, I mean, you have all of these different things. Have you not been tested for these different things? And I was like, no, I haven't. So for about a week of time, I was in and out, and they were doing samples and some testing, and it came back that I had endometriosis.
For some women, that might mean they can't get pregnant, or pregnancy is going to be very hard, or they might need fertility treatments and so forth, right?
That's correct.
And so now, zooming back to the point in your story, you're starting your corporate career, things are feeling definitely better than they were before. You're with a man, you're pregnant, but the pregnancy is not going well.
Correct. Not going well at all. I had gained alarming amount of weight in a very short period of time, probably like almost 100 pounds, and that was the first cause of concern for the doctors that my pregnancy was not going to be very easy. So very shortly after that, around month five, I got diagnosed with preeclampsia and was told that I had to stop working and pretty much be on bed rest for the remainder of my pregnancy, because they were seeing some signs in the growth and activity that were not normal. So that's exactly what I did. The pregnancy just did not get any easier, and I ended up having my daughter a little over a month early because I got to a point where my blood pressure was extremely alarming, and we had to call for an emergency C-section on the spot, essentially. I had my checkup, They did some tests and they were like, you need to get into the OR now. So that time period was like a 6 hour time period. And so by the next morning, my daughter was here, healthy, but very small. Luckily, she did not have to go into NICU or anything like that, but she was born at like 5 pounds, 2 ounces. So that time was just insanely scary. Reward, like so many different emotions come through when you're like, okay, well, not only did I have a bad pregnancy, but now I'm at risk for either having or not having my child, and then there being long-term effects after the fact.
And now you're there with your miracle baby girl.
Yes.
And that for so many people is a huge turning point.
Besides meeting my husband, she is the best thing that has ever happened to my life for just countless reasons.
And we're going to get to the point where you meet your husband. He's coming in the
He's
story. He's not in the story yet,
yeah, he's
but hang on, ladies. He's coming.
Yes. So baby's here. Her name is Ashlyn. Just a beautiful, just obviously a very happy time. In the background, we were not going through a very happy time because the father and I, not that we weren't getting along, because we were very good friends, but emotionally, I think that's where our relationship stood, was friends. And we were having a tremendous amount of pressure from outside sources, immediate outside sources, saying that, we were going against certain things if we did not marry. And due to those pressures, when him and I had no interest in having that relationship long term with one another, went against our own beliefs and our own feelings, and essentially felt forced that we had to get married or we were not going to be accepted by people surrounding us. So us trying to coexist as married friends was rough. It was really rough. No ill will or toxicity or anything like that. We were just at two completely different stages in our lives and wanted different things from each other and out of just life in general. And it came to a point about 3 years into our marriage where that came to an end. My husband at the time, he was very ambitious with his extracurricular activities. He didn't really know. We were kids. We were 21, and not really knowing what that future looked like for us and what paths we wanted to take. He was all over the place where he wanted to stand in society. So he tried a couple of different things, and towards the latter part of our relationship, he decided he wanted to enlist in the army. That entailed him being gone a lot, like a lot, a lot. And again, we always got along, but there was definitely a void, and him and I both knew that this wasn't going to be a long-term investment for both of us. And while he was gone, his first tour, he was gone for 9 months, 9 or 10 months. This was shortly after Ashlyn was born. I'm still like kind of not feeling great after the pregnancy. So I start getting into the gym. Like I start making time for myself. My career is going fantastic with Wells Fargo so far. Like I'm slowly, climbing up the ladder. And so I was like, I'm just gonna take time for myself. I became a member at a gym and just started focusing a lot of my energy on my health and kind of getting myself back into the right state of mind when I'm essentially alone with a baby. I had support. I had like family around me to help, but not like that direct support from her father. In February of 2014, I came into the gym and dropped my daughter off at the little daycare that they had there and walked back to the locker room to put my stuff away and just like had a pull towards this person that was walking on the treadmill. We made eye contact, and it was almost instantaneous that I felt a connection with this person that was unexplainable for literally just putting my eyes on him for the first time. And I get back into the locker room and I'm like, that was a very weird experience for me. And fast forwarding a little bit, months and months after that initial interaction, and it wasn't even an interaction, just that moment in time where you notice another person. Every day after that, for several months, I found myself trying to get to this place at a certain time to just even see if I could like get a glance of him. Weirdly enough, it was happening every day. And I thought that was really strange. Like, there's no way that we have like the exact same schedule. Like, something's really weird about this. And so August of 2014 comes around. I am almost completely detached emotionally from my current husband at this time due to the circumstances that we were in. And he comes back from deployment. So, kind of trying to force myself into this routine with my husband, and there's just no connection there whatsoever. At the same time, simultaneously, this other person is still there physically in the same place. And I caught myself focusing way more on this other person than my husband. It really started to affect me because I was thinking, if I'm having these thoughts right now, then there is not a respectable place for me to be in this relationship. Shortly after that one epiphany that day in August, I kind of forcefully projected myself onto that person's space and gave him my phone number behind my spouse's back. And that was probably, if you can imagine this, one of the scariest moments in my life. Funny enough to say that, but it was a pretty scary moment because, again, I was like risking my morality and also knowingly, actively participating in something that I knew was going to hurt somebody. There was a lot of turmoil within myself. So after providing this person my phone number, I was just kind of stuck in like this void of time. Like, is he ever going to reach out to me? Am I just that person now? Like, how does this end? I need to end one chapter to focus on another, whether that is speaking to this other person or just moving on to the next phase of my life that does not include this relationship that I'm currently in. A few days later, I receive a message from this person. It was a very, very important date that this person messaged me back because it was the anniversary of his brother's death. And the date is really significant to both of us because we knew that it was going to be history after that. Very shortly after the communication started with this other person, me and my current husband did end our relationship and we did end up getting a divorce. Luckily, it was a very amicable situation with no hiccups. And so I'm very, very forever grateful for that. And till this day, him and I are very good friends and very good co-parents. I could not have asked for a better co-parent than him. Immediately throughout this process started that affair. During the separation period, up until my divorce was finalized, I was in an active affair with this person and dealing with all of the emotions that go with that and kind of just feeling like a terrible person. Like, you know that you are altering another family's life. And I live with that guilt till this day, and that's something that him and I are very, very forthcoming with admitting to.
Because he was in a relationship and had children as
One,
well, right?
correct. Yeah, he has four boys. They're just absolutely wonderful humans. I feel very blessed to have them in my life. And so, fast forward after the divorce is finalized, in the midst of a 4-year period, this is when my endometriosis was really active and kind of showing its true colors because during that 4-year period, we had several miscarriages because we were at a point where we might not have been actively trying to have a child together, but everything was telling us that it's not time to have that, or maybe it's just not in your cards. We had a lot of sad moments when it came to that. And so after those periods of time were over, and just kind of like really reflecting on the great dynamic that we had built, it helped a lot to move past the unfortunate emotions that came along with those things happening.
Grief.
The grief, yeah. It's still sad to think about now what could have been, but I would not trade what we have now for the world. I mean, he's been in my daughter's life since she was two, and I've pretty much been in his kids' life almost their entire life as well. We've really, really worked hard to respect each other, respect the dynamic of two blended families. It is not easy. And you really have to put in the effort, and there are learning curves along the way, and you make mistakes, and you learn from those mistakes, and then you make them again, and you keep moving forward. Even still to this day, we've been together for over 11 years, and we're still learning things about how to navigate this situation. But we have chosen each other, and we will continue to choose each other every day, forever. It's just. I don't even know. I don't even know the words to describe it, but there was something that pulled us together 11 years ago. That something that was bigger than him and I, because having lots of conversations over the years and the little nuances of the 6 degrees of separation between him and I, or just random encounters that happened that were like, oh my God, that was you, or like just it blows my mind, and I feel just forever grateful that he took a risk for me. I mean, between him and my daughter, like my life is saved at this point. So.
He has given you a security and a stability that you really haven't had throughout your whole life.
Yeah.
And what a blessing to see where you are now.
Yes.
And knowing too all that was going on with your physical health, that you were able to have a pregnancy and a daughter, is such a gift.
Very much a gift.
Yeah.
And he has made up for any lack of support and love and encouragement, any words that you can think of that I lost out on in my youth. I would not be where I am building my own business today if it wasn't for him being there to root me on after losing my 12-year career at Wells Fargo just abruptly. And he's like, we can always pick up the pieces and we'll make it work. At least we have each other, and that's how we've gone through all of these things, and that's how we're going to continue to get through it.
Brittany, we love to close our episodes with encouragement and hope. I know there are people listening who have been through traumas, maybe similar to yours, or maybe they've had those seasons where it just felt like it could not possibly get worse, and then it got worse over and over and over and over for years. And sometimes it feels impossible, like the pit is so deep, there is absolutely no way to get out. And you were an example of somebody who got out. If you had a couple of minutes just to speak to those who are lost and broken and hurting, what encouragement would you give them?
I would definitely say don't short yourself. And whether you think that you can get through it by yourself or no one wants to be there to help you through whatever it is you're going through, like if you think you're going to be a burden on them, it takes one person that you are comfortable with and expressing your feelings to change your life. And to not be afraid to do that. I love what you're doing with this platform. You're going to change a lot of people's lives just by allowing people a space to show other people that everyone goes through stuff. No matter who you are, like you said, everybody has a story and you are worth it. And you will figure that out, I promise.
You know, when I first asked you to share your story, I had absolutely no idea what your story included. And you looked at me like, oh, I have a story.
I did look at you and said that. I did say exactly that.
And I have to commend you because it takes incredible courage to go back and think about and essentially relive all of your traumas and abuses in order to share it in this way. That is not easy. So thank you for being willing to do that and for being willing to share that with others.
And thank you. The best thing that has come out of this, and really the culmination of this story, is that I now get to break generational curses, and I get to provide and teach and support my kids and my daughter specifically through situations that are imposed on kids that they don't feel comfortable talking about. It makes me feel very grateful that I've provided her a platform as a mother to be there for her. And I will continue to do that for as long as she'll let me because she's a teenager.
Oh my gosh, so true. But, you know, Brittany, you've truly created a safe place for your daughter so that no matter what happens in her story, she'll know she can be real with you. And that is the heart of Story Night. You know, the woman who created Story Night so many years ago at a church in Santa Barbara recognized that women were not speaking into the next generation the way they're called to. And I can't help but think about how your story might have been different when you were a teenager if you had believed that you could tell your story to someone. And I say that not to blame anyone in your life, but to just encourage those of you ladies who are listening to create safe spaces for the women and the girls in your lives. I believe one of the greatest ways to show somebody that you're a safe person and to earn their trust is to be vulnerable yourself and share your own story. Our culture seems to have gotten so like private, despite being so quote unquote connected with social media and such. One of the goals of Story Night is to be authentic with each other and to share our stories in order to build relationships and encourage each other. And on that note, for those of you who are new to Story Night, we want you to know that in addition to this podcast, we host four live events each year. Our next one will be on January 29th, featuring an amazing lady named Veronica. She'll be sharing about growing up Latina and becoming a nurse. Little did she know that she'd have her own life-threatening health journey to endure. Free tickets are available now at storynighthope.com. This will be at the Grand Ballroom on 3rd Street, downtown McMinnville. We expect over 200 ladies, and we'll have snacks and drinks and prizes and plenty of time to socialize before and after hearing Veronica's story. Now, if you're listening to this episode after January 29th, then still go to our website and get the information on whatever event we will have coming up next. Brittany, as I've said before, you are a walking miracle. Thank God for the people who intervened during each of your suicide attempts. As I said in the previous episode, we know that suicide has affected probably everyone listening in some way. If you are struggling, please make use of the resources in the episode notes and take these words of encouragement to heart. You are loved and you are beautiful. You have gifts that the world is waiting for. Someone, somewhere, desperately needs you, either today or in the future. So please stay. There is hope. May God bless you with healing and with support and with a champion. And for those of you listening who aren't personally struggling, I encourage and even challenge you to be that champion for someone. Maybe set a daily alarm on your phone, and every time it goes off, reach out to somebody, especially the youth in your lives, and remind them that they matter. You never know. One message of love could actually save somebody's life. We also want to remind everyone that Oregon's first Youth Suicide Awareness Day is tomorrow, October 9th. For those of you in or near McMinnville, there will be a sunrise walk out of darkness vigil at Discovery Meadows Park, and we would love to see you all there. Brittany, thank you for your courage to share. I've recorded over 150 stories between this podcast and the original Story Night podcast, and I'm not sure I can think of many others who have lived through the quantity and the levels of trauma that you have. I truly believe you are going to make a huge difference in the world by sharing your story. You've been such an encourager to me and to the Story Night Outreach.
Listeners, if you don't know her already, you're going to want to meet Brittany. So please come join us on January 29th at the next Story Night. I also want to take a moment and thank our state representative, Lucetta Elmer. She's a former Story Night speaker, and she believes in the power of sharing our stories. She's the lawmaker who brought forth the bill that created Youth Suicide Awareness Day, and she's the one providing the platform for this season of Story Night. And thank you to everyone listening. We hope that you were blessed and encouraged by Brittany's story and that you come back and join us next time for our next story. Until then, remember, you have a story, your story matters, and you are not alone.